On this episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast, talking about the future of leadership in insurance and InsurTech with Jeff Shee from InsurTech Groups, Sean Davis from Brown Davis, and Ira Ziff from The Insurance Recruiter.
The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JV Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into specific tech we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.
And we are back with another episode, a particularly large group today, but illustrious group. I'm so excited to talk to all of these gentlemen. Going to have some fun, but first, Rob Galbraith, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, man, doing well, James, doing well. It is a tax day as we recorded, and I am still not done. So thanks to all of you for helping me take a quick break before I
Rob, let's talk about that, because there's a major law change that is absolutely nailing InsurTechs right now. It is the R&D deduction change that is shellacking every InsurTech I know, because it is forcing them to schedule out their R&D expenses over 5 or 15 years, depending if it's onshore or offshore. So they're paying tax bills on companies that are losing money, and the IRS is happy to collect it. Congress is doing nothing. Every accountant I talked to who was caught totally flat-footed said, well, we thought they would reverse the change before it was due. Well, guess what, idiots? They didn't. And so I had to have a harsh talk with my accounting firm, as did many InsurTechs I know, because we all had to write some pretty big checks out of investor funds. You know, I didn't, because I'm bootstrapped, but on any of our investments, this is crazy, Rob. Crazy. Tax day is a bad day this year.
Always count on inaction from Congress. That's the one thing you should always count on.
Jeff Shee, have you looked at this? It's a huge issue.
Yeah. And I have my own conspiracy tinfoil hat for that.
Yeah. But you and I probably wearing the same tinfoil hat we usually do. Oh, here's my theory, Jeff. I think they tricked everybody into claiming a whole bunch of R&D expense through the R&D tax credit. And then they said, okay, but now we're going to shellack you on the deduction and make you scheduled over 15 years. So they already know. See, luckily, I've never taken an R&D tax credit. So it's crazy, man. It is millions or tens of millions of dollars that some people are having to write checks for right now, because their main expense as an InsurTech is R&D software development. And now they can't take the deduction in the same year they incur the cash expense. It's really bad. There will be more layoffs. It's going to happen.
If you think about, like, de-dollarization, what Saudi's doing, China and Russia's doing, right? When we have 62% of the dollar park internationally, and now the domestic side have to pick up the bulk shares of dollar usage. So there's a couple of things to do. They can pull the trigger on, right? Pump more money in terms of longer term of debt between the IRS, the Feds, with the institution like PPP, EIDL, R&D tax credit, right?
Yeah.
Or just bring more immigration into the country, have more users on using dollars. You can do it through immigration or cross the borders.
I always just default to they're just incompetent and don't understand their own tax law. But that's could be a logical explanation. I mean, seriously, Occam's razor, right? We'll see. I don't know. You know, you guys are in headhunting. I don't know if y'all have a lot of R&D expenses, but if you're building software, you do. Guessing not.
Sometimes I think we need to build our own software.
Yeah, probably should. Yeah. You know, that was my third client, Sean, was a headhunter. It was a retained search oil and gas headhunting firm in 2001.
Yeah.
I was 21 and I convinced them to let me write a web-based system to manage their entire executive search business, because it was all retained search. We did it. We built the whole thing. We had a bunch of 21, 22-year-olds built the whole thing. It was like the number one oil and gas executive search firm in the world, because they only did the top C level of all the big oil and gas companies, and we built it, rolled it out. Yeah. Crazy. So I had a touch point with the executive search business, and that was it. That was my only touch point, but I got into it. So let's just do brief introductions here. So everybody knows what everybody else does on the show. Of course, I'm James Benham. I'm the host, CEO of JB Knowledge, CEO of Terra and Smart Compliance. Couple of different insure techs that are in policy claims software and certificate of insurance tracking. My brother, by another mother, Rob Galbraith, my co-host on this show, Forest View Insights, consultant extraordinaire, thought leader, author of The End of Insurance as We Know It, Robin, and formerly with USAA and AF Group, I believe.
You got it.
Okay, so I've managed to memorize your resume.
Got my whole CV down.
I got your CV down. Jeff Shee, he is founder of InsureTech Groups. That's InsureTech without an E. Foreshadowing without an E.
Talk to Lisa.
Yeah, talk to Lisa Wardlaw because I may be foreshadowing a change. InsureTechGroups.com. He has spent a really interesting career in auto and motorsports. I just want to mention that he's a gearhead, if there ever was a gearhead, which is super cool. I'm super into machines. My machines fly though, so that's why I'm really into. As Ricky Bobby would say, I like to go fast. and it has spent a lot of time in insurance. You were co-founder of some other companies. Currently, from 2011 to present, founder of J&J Insurance, which is a full service agency, correct?
Right.
And killing it. Doing good. Yeah. Life is good, right?
We're getting there one day at a time.
One day at a time. Well, that's what it is. 1% better every day, right?
Yep.
Sean Davis, managing partner and president, Brown Davis Executive Search Partners, went to Drake University and then, we started doing a whole bunch of work around the industry, Transamerica, onto Genworth. And then 2021, so 2 years ago, started Brown Davis Executive Search Partners. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a tax play. I mean, we'll just stick on that theme. When I started a business during the pandemic, what the hell?
Yeah. I started mine right before 9/11. I was like, hey, dot-com collapse, 9/11. Let's start a business.
Why not?
Why not? Why not? And then Ira Ziff, president of the insurance recruiter. So good to have you on. And a graduate of George Washington University School of Business. And, worked in a couple different industries, but from 1998 to present. So, a few years in the business,
in the hang of it.
has been an executive recruiter. So, dealing with the top C-level guys and, executives in insurance. So, glad to have y'all on. Let's jump right into our opening question. We've got 25 minutes left here. Let's jump into our question. I'll kind of do a little roundabout. How do you see the role of leadership in the insurance industry changing in the coming years? And we've got a lot of factors coming in. We've had a super hard market. We've got, inflation kicking everybody's butts. We got high interest rates. We've had a lot of personnel turnover, and, we had the trauma of COVID, and, we had a lot of movement of people. Now that's kind of settling down as layoffs hit. And I think we're going to see more and more layoffs. And, you've got some retrenchment and then a little pullback in the insurance market. Real dynamic time right now. I'm going to start with Ira. And I'd just like to hear from you, Ira, because you've got some really great experience in the executive and talent space. How you see the role of leadership in this industry changing from here going forward.
Well, if you look at the age wave that's happening in the insurance industry, more than most industries, it's really weighted very heavily on the older worker. And so leadership really has to think carefully about how to bring up the younger employees from the ground up. So often you talk to younger people and they say, well, we just can't get into the company because we don't have enough experience. Well, if companies were able to adapt their hiring process to skill up people, we'd have a better chance of getting more people into the business. And one of the things that insurance suffers from is a bad reputation. And leadership has to express why they fell in love with insurance and to affect other people's opinions about it.
Yeah, it's funny because very few people went to college for insurance. Those schools do exist. And, I'm happy they exist, that children at age 18, 19, 20 can actually select to study a career in insurance, multi-trillion-dollar business, good business to be in. Most of us fall into it. And I think we forget to articulate like to others what made us excited about it in the first place, right? Yeah, that's interesting. Jeff, your thoughts on this?
Oh, I have so many. And I think one of the reasons I was trying to put this podcast together with two people who is deep in the industry and two of the best podcasters out there was a conversation I had from ITC. So I attended ITC last year, and then there was this one gentleman. He was a co-founder of a software company, right? And then we're just exchanging notes. We're both, leaving the event. I said, hey, how was your event? And he told me he was on stage presenting, you know, his company. And then there was a gentleman that had a couple of drinks in his hands and kind of called him out, right, about, you know, do you guys here, do you InsurTech? He categorized them. He said, do you InsurTech people really think you're making a difference, right, or something along that line? And then he was trying to come back with something that's clever, but not too personal. So he was like, well, you know, that's because the old guards are all blocking us in because, you know, some of the legacy carriers, if they allow too much change to happen, then people are going to be like, hey, what have you done? Why haven't you let the change happen, right? So I guess legacy company are trying to block the change, but at the same time, they say, hey, we're just going to do our due diligence and attend these InsurTech events, right? I think, you know, where the next future is going with personnel in the big insurance companies is they have embraced InsurTech, you know, the change that's coming. Mm-hmm. I don't think that makes sense. Like, I just
you think they view it as just a threat to stable operations?
Yeah, I think they view it as just, you know, going through the motion versus like truly embrace a change. And I think I feel that a lot of times, you know, when I talk to people, they're like, oh, you know, you guys are InsurTech. InsurTech don't really make money. You know, there's not many InsurTech proven to us that all the changes are making money. We still do business the old-fashioned way. We're still making money. But I think sometime at some point it will catch up. Change don't happen overnight. It's like boiling the frog 1 degree at a time. People just look down at, like, you know, some of the current InsurTech that's not performing, like Roots or Metro Miles, right? That has been the news for not performing. But if you go back, right, the most successful InsurTech is USAA. And then what spun out from USAA is Geico, you know. And those two organizations was at the cutting edge of changes nonstop the past 50 years.
Yeah, but that it didn't happen overnight, right? And I think that's one of the things is you, when you have a major sea change, and you could argue Geico was a pretty major change in the way that insurance was sold and delivered and managed. It was not a 1 or 2 or 4 year project to get it there, right? And certainly the change naysayers are going, and Sean, I'm sure you've seen this in your tenure in insurance, that people who are the anti-change crowd are going to cling on to any kind of negative news to justify their position. It's the phrase is called moral licensing, right? It's when you license something that's the exception to the rule, and then you make it apply to the blanket, you know, to a panacea of things. It can be very dangerous. And I'm sure you've seen this in some of the executives you recruited where, you know, maybe they engage in, you know, referencing one negative thing that happened 8 years ago, and that's why they don't want that candidate. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that happens too. You're like, well, you know, Lemonade's losing money and Hippo's losing money and Metromile's losing money. So InsurTech is BS. Well, okay, hold on. They're forcing everybody's hand at changing the user experience and underwriting and quoting and binding and paying and, you know, speeding up the claims process. So Sean, have you seen this among some of the executives you've dealt with and have recruited?
Yeah, you know, I can go like to my personal experience too. I was an early partner with some InsurTechs when it was just kind of a cool buzzword. And I think everyone was looking for a reason. It was like an internal initiative or project that everyone say this too shall pass. And so it was just looking for the reason of this would fail. And they would ask deep questions of, oh, you know, what's their placement rate or just all these different questions to get a better understanding of why to shoot holes in it, to your point, versus if we brought on some standard distribution, legacy distribution, if you will, it would be, hey, we can start that thing up. No problem at all. And so just the change that everyone needed to see versus like the new shiny object to actually what it is. Cause I think it got a little bit of the bad rap of everyone either thought or wanted it to be disruptive, that it was this disruptive force that was coming in and going to change everything and misplace all the traditional incumbents. And then actually what it is and likely will succeed better at is it's an enabler. It's going to evolve and push us into a better spot. And to your point that you just hit on, I think a lot of it is not so much about the acquisition of new consumer markets or whatever it may be. It's more of like the middle layers of how do you change the value chain and the process along. And I think that's what people are now appreciating more. And executives are more open to, you guys recruit for InsurTechs. Tell me about who's the best. I had someone ask the other day, like, hey, who's your top 10 favorite InsurTechs right now? And honestly, that list was different 2 years ago, because it's going to change.
What has been a criteria in your very subjective definition of favorite on insurance? You don't have to tell me who they are.
Just
give me, because I don't want to make it awkward, right? Let's not make it weird. But like, tell me what your criteria is for favorite InsurTech. Is it culture? Is it the technology stack? What about it makes a good InsurTech?
Yeah, great question. And honestly, I think going through the latest capital markets put a little bit more emphasis on capital structure and responsibility. Do they have it sounds terrible, but I started hearing, VCs and others say, we're going to focus on profitable growth. That's a really good idea, regardless of the capital markets. I get the whole VC idea of, multiplier impacts and effects. But so now when we're meeting with the teams and whether it's seed stage, we're looking for a co-founder dealer right now, and then later stage, it could be D or E. It is the strategy, the roadmap, product market fit. Is it a hope and a dream on a pitch deck that sounded really good? Or do you actually have a business model that can work here, and you're proving that or re-engineering that? And then, the people. I think one of the biggest things that I really look for now, James, is when do they bring insurance expertise in? A lot of times they may not be from the industry and they will openly admit that. And then some will try to do all of it as much as possible without bringing it in. And they forget how hard this business is for really good reasons. And the ones that I've seen succeed, I think quicker and maybe more successfully, have brought an insurance expert or expertise in that fits that fits the culture and the style of the organization, the personality. But that's a big piece for me.
Yeah. That's good. Rob, your thoughts?
Yeah. I just want to kind of go one level deeper, right, with this terrific conversation. And I'll ask that we go in the same order. So Ira, Jeff, and then Sean, what new skills and qualities do you think insurance leaders need to possess to succeed just with all the growth, the shifts, the advancement on the insurance arc front, even if it's, leading a more traditional firm? I'm just curious, like, where are you seeing, this is what the leader of tomorrow needs to possess? Ira, we'll start with you.
Oh, okay. I've spent the last 2 days at InsurTech Innovators, and a lot of conversations are around the whole idea of being empathetic. And it really will help impact engagement, productivity, and retention. And it will also impact the whole idea of using DEI as, a new management tool to grow your business. So it's not about what you say, it's how people feel what you say. And I think, if you boil it down, and I hate to make it so simple, but empathy is really lacking. And you look at these big companies and you wonder how anything gets done at times.
Yeah, Jeff, any thoughts? I love this from Ira.
That question took me to another place, and I'm just sidetracked a little bit, right? So there's two stories. Netflix just celebrated their 25 years from inception, right? And then there's a guy I follow, I think Mark something. He's one of the co-founder, not Hastings, but Mark something. And he posted on LinkedIn, which I follow him. They went to Blockbuster in Dallas.
I saw your post on this.
Try to sell themselves because they were running out of money. They were like one payroll away from being done. And then they were like, hey, Blockbuster, would you buy us for $50 million? And Blockbuster just laughed them out of the room and says, no. And then didn't even, no counter offer. Not like you want 50, we give you 15, but like, no, right? And there's a guy named Elon Musk. He sold his company for $100 million, split it in half, and $50 million went to SpaceX, some little company, and then $50 million went to a little company called Tesla. Was running out of cash. He was on his last payroll, 3 days away, and then went to Apple, and Apple laughed at him. And then Apple said, no, we don't want to acquire you guys. There's nobody can drive EVs, right, or something like that. Just imagine if those executives made that decision, said, maybe we don't want to believe in EV, but do we want to believe in Elon? Or maybe we don't want to believe in Netflix. Do we want to believe in these founders? We are seeing the same thing here in InsurTech, right? Because we saw a lot of VC just cool off, right? They pumped the brake on the dry powder. And there's a lot of good InsurTech out there that had revenue, velocity concept. And they were just throttling the money spend. And out of nowhere, like, oh, we got to change our business plan because our valuation are now changed because spec IPO are gone now. So there's a good inflow, outflow, mostly outflow of talent coming out of InsurTech. And it's a regional carrier, distribution brokers, super niche carriers or legacy carriers, are they grabbing these talent, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, just because a founder left InsurTech, you know, there's 8,000 founders out there on the InsurTech side. Just because they fail at something, it doesn't mean that their concept failed. What they weren't trying to solve a problem. It takes a lot of things to put one thing together. So between Sean and Ira, they are potentially grabbing a lot of talent that's just potentially flowing out there in the ecosystem. And where they may go could be a game changer for some of these legacy companies. That's my thought, and I ramble on. So sorry.
Yeah, Sean, maybe you can bring us home. I'm just kind of thinking, you know, new skills that Ira identified, new sources of talent that Jeff identified. What are you seeing from your perspective?
Yeah, I would add just a couple. I think those are really good ones. First principle thinking, I think, is something that's it's key as we move forward, just because of the pace of innovation and all the changes that we see. So kind of getting to that root cause, you mentioned Elon, he has some great articles out there about first principles thinking. I think that's something that, quite frankly, in my 16 years of corporate career, no one ever raised, and all the personality assessments that I took or corporate development, global class, you know, whatever it was. I'm absorbed in that concept. I love it. Growth mindset. I think you got to have that going forward, no matter if we're in, 2 to 4% industry. And then I think curiosity is huge. I think you have to be curious in this industry. If you're not curious, if you're not asked questions, and some of those tie together, you're going to miss the boat on, to your point, Jeff, either a partner you could have partnered with that could have solved a problem that you didn't need to innovate itself in your R&D department, or just, I mean, the latest influencer AI that everyone's talking about. Like, why not start asking really interesting questions around what ChatGPT can do for insurance? And if you're not asking those questions, you're failing the board at the top level. Like, your board should be asking those questions.
They should be. It's something, you know, I'm on the board of a public university and we're having the same conversation.
Yeah.
Because there's an incredible amount of content available, educational content for free. There's an incredible amount of low cost paid content for, you know, online. Right. Then at some point you have to ask the existential question, why does a brick and mortar public university still exist? You know, and I'm a believer. I'm a hardcore believer. I'm wearing the brand right now for Texas Southern. And I love the mission that we have. We transform lives. We do. But I think that every organization has to come to grips with the existential threats that exist around them, either to end them or completely transform them. And ideally you get ahead of it. You know, ideally you get ahead of it. I mean, software development companies, guys, I've owned a software company for 22 years. Software companies have to deal with the fact that we have Copilot and GitHub. Copilot is an AI tool. It's kind of ChatGPT for writing code. By the way, you can use ChatGPT to write code. So you can say, hey, build a SQL query for me to manage HR data, and it'll do it. Then you say, build some JavaScript for me that will manage HR data with the SQL data you just built, and it'll do it. Like it knows English and Spanish and JavaScript and SQL. It treats them like another language. I've used it to write code just as a test. I mean, we have to deal with the fact that Copilot, which is another Microsoft product under GitHub, will help write the code for you. And so when you make your money selling time to write code, you have to ask yourself, okay, how much time are we going to sell if these AI assistant bots are writing a third of the code or half the code?
Right.
You know, and how does that change our job? Are we still engineers or are we assemblers? Are we manufacturers? Like what's the role? And then, you know, insurtechs have to ask yourself the same. I mean, I think all insurtechs have to ask themselves the question, what the hell is an insurtech first? Because that I've never gotten a uniform definition of that from anybody in the space, Jeff. Like, I know what my answer is. Huh?
Moving insurance forward through technology.
There you go. That's a nice one sentence. And they have to say, what is forward? They're going to say, is Ford's plus 100 combined loss ratios? Is that moving forward? They're going to say that, right? They're going to throw it in our face, but that's not really the answer, is it?
You know, one thing I see, like, you know, Financial Times, PNC Insiders, all these, you know, news media outlets, they cover companies, but they don't cover individuals. And then the change that individuals make, you know, when you take a, I don't know, a new CTO going to a company, how much change they bring to that company. And I think, you know, through your platforms, you guys could cover that a little bit more because there's a lot of change happening.
A whole bunch. Yeah, a whole bunch. Absolutely. Rob?
Yeah, guys, I'm curious. We also know the nature of work is changing, right? Remote work during the pandemic. I keep seeing, you know, people are slowly going back to the office, and depending on your situation, where you live, what's your personal situation, a whole number of factors, right? I know some had said, oh, we'll never go back to the office. Others, right, are kind of changing their tune on that, or have steadfastly said no, right, from the very beginning. That can cause churn, right? That can cause people to leave. And I'm even seeing at the very entry level positions, people, and we've talked about it here, I've talked about it in a number of my keynotes that I've given. Why would I want to be a claims apprentice, an underwriting apprentice, when I can make, you know, $30 an hour walking somebody's dog, right? And I get to set the conditions of my employee, I get to set the hours of the day, like when I drive my rideshare, things like that. So just curious, as we think about the changing nature of work, how are you seeing leaders respond to that, both, I would say, on a good side, and then maybe there's some ways or some negative trends that you'd think, hey, I'd like to throw up a caution flag here for anyone that's listening.
So I think it's a really interesting question. And I think one of the things that I always talk about with executives is, not directly at them, but it's the idea of the changing world, and whether it's remote, hybrid, or whatever it is, they'll say, hey, the company's decided to go back to the office or whatever. And the key thing that they have to understand is the company did not decide. The leadership decided that the people are going to come back to the office. And so with the first alignment, right, being if your individual need or desire is to work remote, hybrid, or whatever flex schedule it may be, the people have decided that that may not be the case at said company. And so many times I keep seeing like, oh, you know, XYZ without an E decided to go back to the office, and it's the people. So that then, and then the people creates, like, right, the organism of culture. And so I think it's going to continue to evolve. I'm seeing more and more shift back to the office for sure. I think some of the best practices that we're going to see going forward is, you can choose. Now, I have no solve at all in the world for the real estate challenge that's going to create from a commercial standpoint for all these companies that hold this stuff. But the employees that have flexibility when we're recruiting for roles, we've done quite a few relocations already. And then we're doing ones that are remote. And then some of the members on the executive team are not remote, or the one role requires relocation, but the rest of the team is remote. It's kind of a hard sell pitch on some of those things to attract the best talent for that. Your talent market pool is limited based on how you answer that question of workplace preference, right? So if you say remote, bam. Now, some people say like, hey, I know it's remote, but I would like to still come into the office. So I think it's definitely changing. And then I think that also some of the things that we talked about earlier about the leadership style and how you communicate as a leader, how you're going to connect with people. The world has changed, especially with the demographic shift that we're already, you know, hit on and talked about. You have to figure out how to engage regardless if it's going to be in the office sitting next to me or thousands of miles away. I think the communication, the empathy that Ira talked about, and the connection piece is going to be tremendous and challenging for leaders to adapt to as this world kind of evolves and we kind of figure out what maybe the new normal looks like.
And I'd like to add to that, Sean, if you don't mind. I think the whole world has been whiplashed by the pandemic. And yep. What's happening is that, you know, everything was remote, and now the pendulum is trying to swing right back to normal, if you will. And there's a lot of tension. So let me give you just what recently happened with a search. I was looking for a CFO for an insurer and found the perfect person 20 minutes away, gave him a 30% increase in pay. I said, nothing doing. If I can't work remote, I'm not coming. It's nuts. People feel like they can get away with it, and they're very entitled, and they're not millennials either.
No. These are people in their 50s, 60s, and 70s doing this. I've I've seen it at three of my clients in the last, you know, 3 months. People just saying, hey, I'm remote. And if I'm not remote, I'm out. And they're in their 60s. You know, it's not a millennial thing. I've actually never been a believer in the generational stereotypes anyway, but well, that's a really great one. And look, we could go on for a long time. We're already at our 40 minutes for the show, but let's do a part two, Jeff Shee. This is a great idea, Jeff, to have maybe a multi-part on leadership and insurance. So I'll talk with the folks and we'll get that together. And next time there might not be an E around when you need one.
We have a lot of good ideas. Just keep on rolling on topics and subjects. I mean, this is the least talked about of insurance tech, right? People talk about CX, people talk about UX, but people don't talk about the people who are changing the insurance tech. So
yeah, you got at the end of the day, companies don't make decisions. Companies don't build products. People do.
Yep.
So on that note, we're gonna wrap the show. It was a great discussion. We're gonna have to do this again sometime. That'll be a lot of fun to have that group. But this has been another episode of the Insure Tech Geek Podcast. Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our interview with Jeff Shee from Insure Tech Groups, with Sean Davis from Brown Davis, and Ira Ziff from the Insurance Recruiter. We'll see you on the next show. Thank you.
Thank you.
The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, jbknowledge.com. It's all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham. That's jamesbenham.com, with co-host Rob Galbraith at endofinsurance.com. And thank you for joining us today. Look forward to talking with you soon. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech. So enjoy the ride and geek out.